welcome to episode 27 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. Today it's the 31st of January 2023. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office Horizon IT scandal for Computer Weekly back in 2009.
Hello, my name is Nick Wallace and I am the author of the book The Great Post Office Scandal, which earlier this month spent a whole day on top of Amazon's criminal investigations chart. And I have the screenshot to prove it.
This podcast would usually be covering the Post Office Horizon IT inquiry, but it's on a 3-week break due to venue-related issues. So this episode is mainly given over to a special guest interview with Adeep Sethi that we recorded last week. He is the son of a postmaster who is still waiting to be compensated 20 years after being turfed out of his branch due to what was patently a malfunctioning Horizon IT system.
Now, if you don't know what the Post Office's malfunctioning Horizon IT system is, I will try and explain in 15 seconds. In 1999-2000, the Post Office rolled out a new IT system called Horizon into its then 18,000-odd branches across the UK. It was described at the time as the largest non-military IT system in Europe, and it did postmasters' transactions and their accounts for them. Unfortunately, it didn't work very well. It created multi-thousand-pound holes in many postmasters' accounts for which they were held liable. Some, like Baljit Sethi, were sacked. Others were hounded for the cash, prosecuted and criminalised on an industrial scale. It's the largest miscarriage of justice in UK legal history.
And if you want to find out more, a quick Google will help you out, or you can read Nick's book. It's very good. Okay, let's turn our attention to the Sethi family. Baljit Sethi was the first former postmaster to give evidence during the human impact phase of the inquiry back in February last year. He was also one of the first people to publicly raise the alarm about the Post Office's Horizon IT system back in 2002. After he'd been given his notice by the Post Office, he told the Brentwood Gazette that the problems were due to a faulty computer system installed by Post Office Limited.
Baljit was born in Kuala Lumpur, studied law in Bombay and began a career in banking. He came to England in 1976 and he turned 70 last year. In 1983, he and his wife Anjana bought a post office in Romford in Essex. She was the actual sub-postmaster and he managed the shop and they ran a successful business together. Their pre-Horizon accounts were impeccable. At the Romford branch, their post-Horizon accounts were also impeccable. But in 2001, Baljit was persuaded by the post office to take on a second branch in nearby Brentwood.
Once he was there, he could not get the accounts to balance. He knew it wasn't him. They got a fellow sub-postmaster to come in and have a look, and he could not make sense of it. They concluded that it was the new Horizon IT system. He was losing £1,000 a week out of his accounts, and he repeatedly asked the post office for help and got none. One day, the post office auditors came in and found a £17,000 hole, and Baljit was given 3 months' notice of termination. On his final day, the post office did a closing audit, and he had a £38,000 surplus. The post office removed his computers and refused to give him the surplus. They later wrote to him saying the deficit was actually £53,000 and demanded that he pay up. Baljit refused, but was not prosecuted. He and Anjana lost both their post offices, their businesses suffered, and they ended up going into an insolvency agreement.
Okay, let's have a listen to Baljit's evidence to the Post Office Horizon IT inquiry, which was given on the 14th of February last year. Jason Beer, a barrister to the inquiry, is asking the questions.
You say in your statement that you are deeply worried that you or your wife will die before you achieve any form of justice or meaningful compensation. Is that the case?
Yes, sir.
So what do you want from the Post Office?
Number one, we want an apology from the Post Office saying they're sorry what they have done to us. We have not even received a single letter till today saying they were wrong, they apologised, they're sorry. They haven't done that. The impact that they had on us. The people who did this, they should be investigated. Not a single person has been brought to charge. Not one person. This goes right till the top. So I can't say, oh, my manager did it, or my sub-manager did it. I'm sorry, right up to the chief executive or the director of the post office, everybody knew what exactly was happening. So I want that to be done. Thirdly, no amount of compensation can return us the 20 years of hell we have gone through. Only my wife and I know it. How we have struggled in these 20 years. He has worked so many hours for a petty amount of money. But we didn't want handouts. We didn't go to the state to give us unemployment benefit or anything. We said, no, we will make a life. We'll work hard. So I want a good compensation, not only for me, but for my colleagues. There are people who are worse off than me, who suffered. They went to prison. I must say, I consider myself lucky that I didn't go, because mine turned to a surplus. What if it would have not turned to a surplus? My wife would have to go to prison, not me, because she was a sub-postmistress. They would have charged her. And who would have looked after my children? Our family would have been broken. Children would have not been educated. They wouldn't be what they are today. I'm so proud today of my children. I can hold my head up and say, they work so hard. And I'm such a proud, we are so proud parents of our children. They've helped us in every aspect. Instead of we helping them. So I hope you, sir, that the post office looks into this and gives us our due, which should have been done long time back. I don't want them to keep postponing and saying it'll happen in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, down the year. No, give us something now.
That was Baljit Sethi giving evidence at the inquiry almost a year ago. Now, because Baljit wasn't prosecuted or part of the High Court action against the post office, he qualified for compensation under the Post Office's Historical Shortfall Scheme, or HSS, which accepted applications for a few short weeks during the pandemic in 2020.
Despite applying to the scheme, Baljit has not been made an offer yet. Baljit's youngest son, Adeep, has been helping his parents fight for compensation for more than 2 years. We started our interview by asking Adeep what happened to the Sethi family after their post offices were taken from them.
My dad was, you know, looking around for jobs and what he could do, and he ended up retraining, having to take a security to become a security guard. And when I say security guard, I mean sort of the local supermarket security guards that you guys see. He worked nights mainly as well. So again, 16, 17 was how old I was. My sister therefore was going to be 6 or 7, 8 years old at that time. You know, my dad would sleep during the day, then go to work long shifts at night, standing on his feet as a security guard. Now, you know, that's a very big, to have your own business and be kind of a, and again, everyone will say that they are pillars of the community. Anyone who's worked for all the post office, you've heard this again in the inquiry. You walk down the street and people know who you are because you run the local post office, and the old people come in and get their pensions and they know who their kids are and things. It is kind of like a very neighbourly thing. To go from that to then having to, and your own business, to then be a security guard, literally at the age of 50 plus, having to, sometimes he was getting, you know, physically, verbally abused because of, you know, being a security guard, someone trying to steal something from, you know, the local store and things. It's a big difference. And at the age, I always got worried because he'd come home and he'd be like, oh, you know, someone tried to steal something from today and we had to try and get them, and they physically attacked him or pushed him. Do you know what I mean? That's very different to what he had to, but there was nothing else he could do, right? He had to find a job, and there wasn't an abundance of jobs at the age of 50 after this.
How did it financially impact your parents and your family?
Really badly. So following the post office closure, my parents went through IVA, which is effectively a form of bankruptcy. So they couldn't pay their debts that they owed. So the post office closed, and the post office, as I mentioned, had a lot of passing business as well, because it was quite a busy post office. Once the post office had closed there, people who were coming in, that could be just to drop a post office and buying a pack of cigarettes, for example, that all dries up because people aren't coming there anymore. So that passing through trade business dries up. So financially, we lost the business, we lost the salary, we lost everything to do with the post office. That was quite a large amount. Just the salary alone is enough to, obviously, it's his salary at the end of the day. And then you add on all the business. So they went through, they couldn't pay their bills, they couldn't pay pretty much anything. They went through IVA, so they are then blacklisted. You couldn't even get a current account, for example. You are what's known as sort of financially untouchable. But this is where it gets really difficult. Your mortgage, which is nearly everyone in the country's biggest outpay, is their mortgage. My parents could no longer afford the mortgage. So Santander, or the bank, sorry, that gave their mortgage, comes to the remortgage. I remember this vividly. the rate they were paying, this is post 2008 now, it's a post the financial crisis. You'll remember the Bank of England interest rate is 0.5%, I believe, at the time. My parents could only get the worst of the worst mortgages, which meant they were paying 6.5% to their mortgage lender because they couldn't afford to get a good rate because they, one, had no money, but two, they were blacklisted because of the IBA. They said, you have no savings, you're kind of on the worst of the credit ability anyway. And then when it, and you think now, people are getting worried now today of 6.5% or 5% sort of mortgages. This was 2000, just after 2008. They were paying 6.5% at that time for a number of years. So they were hit from all areas, and it meant my dad had to work 7 days a week doing nights. Sometimes he'd actually, and this is genuinely, I couldn't believe it, sometimes he'd work a day and a night shift together, which kind of meant you weren't... Now, he could have not done that, obviously, but because of the financial pressures they were under, he would have to kind of squeeze everything. If they said, can you stay, you know, somebody's coming in late, the security guard to replace you isn't going to be here for another 4 hours or 2 hours, they've got train delays, can you wait? He'd say, sure, you're going to pay me for it, obviously. But it just meant that an overnight 12-hour shift might have turned into a 14-hour shift, 16-hour shift by the time you get home. So it kind of, you can't underestimate forget the financial impact. You can talk about that for day as it is. You cannot underestimate the pressure of living under that financial impact as well as having the no money kind of thing.
That sounds exhausting.
Yes, massively.
And it kind of gives a sense of how complicated the impact has been on people. Not just, like you mentioned, financially. The financial impact alone is complicated when you think about these interest rates. But yeah, and then you add in the kind of mental health, physical health. It's full on.
Yeah. The mortgage repayments ended up moving to sort of interest only payments because they couldn't afford the capital. So they weren't actually paying off their mortgage anymore. They were just paying what the bank would give them to satisfy the interest payments. But so let's say you owed whatever, an arbitrary number. So say you owed 150,000 left of capital on your thing. They was not denting that at all, which means you'd never own your home, right? You were just making the payments to keep the bank happy. Which kind of just exacerbate the issue further as well. You're going nowhere. You're kind of stuck in a rut.
What do you think this has done to your dad particularly? Because I've met him. He's a very proud man, a very upright man. And as you say, pillar of the community, sort as so many sub-postmasters are. What did it do to him? And how did you see any of that when you were, as you went past your teenage years, in terms of the impact on him?
Yeah, I think you saw that at the inquiry as well. My father being the first person that was called up to the inquiry last year, he broke down in tears. And I think he has struggled emotionally. I think, as anyone would, because the pressures, again, you're kind of, we're maybe lucky enough, us guys here, but like, can you imagine thinking, well, if I don't work every day this month, I'm not going to pay my mortgage this month. So the pressure you are put under, and again, through no fault of your own, you've done nothing wrong. You've been a victim of horrible circumstances, and not just circumstances, but deliberate circumstances by the post office. The stress that must be under, and I remember this because he'd annoy his workplace because he'd call up every 4 hours or so going, if on a day that he wasn't working, is there any jobs available? Has anyone not turned up? I remember one time, again, being a security guard, somebody hadn't turned up. We live in Essex. Somebody hadn't turned up to a security job in Heathrow, which is a good hour and a half to 2 hours train journey. And they said, yeah, somebody hasn't turned up in Heathrow. And he would then go, right, I'll take that. And then jump on a train for 2 hours to get to like Heathrow or West London side to go and work there, just because he knew that if he didn't get a full set of days, working days, like 7 days a week, in most cases, he would struggle to make his mortgage payments. So that stress that puts you under. And again, you've got kids.
The kids thing, I imagine. I mean, not just sort of missing seeing you guys growing up, but also when you are building a business, as he was, you think that you are heading in a certain direction, that you're going to be able to provide for your family and leave something or leave a legacy or just you're actually working towards something worthwhile, which I can't necessarily imagine you might feel working as a security guard. And I just wonder whether that side of things was ever apparent to you.
Yeah, again, and I think that comes back to that proud man, and again, being that pillar of the community, and going from that to being rumours, you know, about you, about your business, they were stealing from the post office, because that was kind of the, you know, the idea effectively that the post office were planting in people was, it's not us, it's not our system, it's people thieving from the post office effectively. And
yeah, and if a local branch closes
and
down,
money shortfalls,
there's an immediate cloud of suspicion because people start talking.
Exactly. And yeah, so I think, again, that massively did impact him, because he was quite proud, he was quite well known, and he was always, you know, they would talk to their customers. And again, you're kind of ostracized a little bit from that, therefore, and rumors abound about you. And after this all came out, after the inquiry, you'd be shocked how many people reached out to my dad and said, I had no idea, like the scale of it, kind of thing, of what was going on. But which is fine, it was great to hear that now, but we're talking 15, 20 years on. But at the time, there were people who, you know, we knew those circles, those rumours that were happening about, you know, and not just my parents, other people as well, that has happened. So I think it massively impacted certainly my father more, but the whole scale of things. I mean, let's take, for example, even me going to university, you know, they couldn't provide. So I worked at university when I was, you know, studying. My brother and my sister did the same sort of thing. Like those sort of things that you maybe wouldn't have had to do had this not have happened. It goes on and on. It's kind of a spider web that continually sort of sprawls across with the post office.
I was going to ask, actually, do you think it's had a long-term impact on you and your siblings?
I think we've always been very sort of work focused because of my parents, because they worked very hard. One thing I will say, I never want to be owning my own business now. I'm kind of, you know, being that entrepreneurial spirit, I've kind of parked to one side, I think, because you saw what happened. You saw, again, the you know, if what happened to my parents, and you kind of probably want to go the opposite direction. We've always worked very hard, but I think it has impacted, certainly. I think we've worked hard to where we are today, and we've done well, but that's kind of more a self-drive thing, you know. And it certainly was. I remember during my exams, I was working on a Saturday or a Sunday to work at the local electrical store, you know, selling TVs and fridge freezers, all that sort of stuff. And when I was at university, I remember, you know, because you kind of, again, there wasn't an ability, not that everyone has that ability, but you sometimes parents would just, you know, here's a bit of money before you go to university and things like that. You couldn't get, you know, that wasn't the case. I mean, that's fine. It wasn't their fault or anything like that. But people forget how wide this goes down. So if you now have to study at university but also work every weekend, that's going to obviously be more detrimental to you than it is to someone who doesn't have that need to do that, because they're not in such financial straits. So I think it does it has continued for a number of years after.
So why is it that it's taken so long for any discussion about compensation to happen with the post office, given that the scheme was opened and closed in 2020?
We applied to that scheme, yeah, completely correct. We applied to the scheme in 2020. We're now, you know, 27th of January, 2023. Okay. So, I could talk about this issue specifically for quite a while. The first of all, the historical shortfall scheme, it's designed by the post office. Okay. And let's be clear, it's not designed. And I've been working through this for the last 3 years almost. It's almost like as a victim, you're having to prove your victimhood effectively, and the onus is on us to prove what happened, as opposed to the post office saying, yes, you were dealt, you know, wrongly by the post office, and we'll make it right as quick as possible. So we applied for the historical shortfall scheme, which again wasn't the easiest of things to do. You kind of have to pull out information, if you do have that information, to provide evidence and things like that, which again, nearly no one will have that, considering how long ago we're talking, 20 plus years.
How much did you claim for?
I'd rather not say if that's okay. But I think financially, whatever it would never be, you know, there is no amount that would make up for what's happened. But the fact that I work in a company, I don't know anywhere in the world where you would have, certainly in the UK, if you had a company, let's say you had a complaint, you bought a car, you had a complaint with Tesco, whatever it is, right? Would they take 3 years to fix it? I think, I mean, like, that's, and anyway, we're not talking about a loaf of bread here. We're talking about people's livelihoods, people who have lost their lives over this issue. You think they'd be, let's move as quick as we can, It's clearly not the case, right? It's been 3 years.
But just to give people a sense of how much the amount that you might be looking for, I presume you factored in not just the financial losses at the time and the loss to the business at the time, but the future losses that you and your family suffered as a result of your father having to work as a security guard on what must be close to minimum wage compared to running his own business over what is now a period of nearly 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. We factored in a loss of salary, for example, right? So we took out a lease of the post office, which was for about 10 years, because the idea was, again, as I said, to run that post office for 10 years. It closed after year one. The loss of salary from the post office alone would have been, you know, a salary every year for them, which was, you know, but you're factoring in all the other things as well on top of the salary. So like I said, the sales, because they had a shop. So the loss of sales, they had the lease of a property above that we were renting out. They lost the property, obviously, as well, in terms of everything they lost. And then you're going into the financial hardship, the mortgage, as I mentioned, having to remortgage at the worst possible rate. So it's an amount, but it will never really ever make up for. I'd rather it never happen, right?
Of course.
But even even if you just think about the amount of time you've had to spend over the last 3 years, add up your time.
But you've put in a big claim, and as you say, you've been waiting nearly 3 years. What kind of discussions have been taking place between you and the post office about why it's taking so long, and what, if any, issues there are or aren't with your claim?
We made the submission, and what was interesting was I started to send chasers after we made the submission. Where are you? What's the status? Mr. Setti, we're looking for it. We'll come back to you. That was kind of like a stock answer. It was a copy and paste answer pretty much every time. The week of the government inquiry starting, when my father's name was publicly listed as the first speaker, I get a contact from the post office, which is it's very surprising, right? Out of all the time they don't come speak to us, the week my father's name is the first person, Mr. Setti, we're looking at your application. We have some additional questions, and this came out in the inquiry. They sent a list of 65 questions. Some of those 65 had sub questions, so in total you're looking at 100 questions to say to move your application to the next stage. We need to answer these questions. Can you come back to us?
And this was what, February
20, yeah, it would have been around that time. So it's been running for a number of years already with nothing going. I keep saying this, and again, this is part of our inquiry submission. It's an opaque process. I have no visibility into the process. You're telling me we'll come back to you, but let me know, what stage is it? Are we at stage one? Are we at stage seven? Apparently there's seven stages, which I've only just found out recently. Where are we? I've asked these questions too, then, by the way. What's the average time at each stage? So I know, and my parents can have some comfort that you're at stage five and it takes 30 days, you know, wherever it is. Nothing. At one point...
So the first substantive response...
The week before the inquiry.
...was the week before the inquiry, which was 18 months on from your submission.
Yeah. And then they gave you 30 days to respond to their questions. I wrote back... I eventually answered the questions, but I made it very clear that I expect a response in 30 days from them. As you can imagine, that didn't happen. And then chasing. And last year... there was a period where I kind of just lost my, really did. I wrote to them, I think, on a nearly monthly basis, asking for an update, no responses at all. And I mean, over July, August, September, October, I think it was a 4 month period or so where I was asking for an update to our application and I received not a single response. And then when they did come back to a response in October, they pointed me to their email in July to say, can you refer back to their email in July, which didn't have the information that I was asking for, like where are we, what's the stage, what's the average time at each stage. So it really is, and again, my parents have me to deal with this. They're you know, not everyone has a Rottweiler to chase after this like my parents do, so people are just kind of held up. And still today, you know, I'm still sending chasers, what's the status, where are we and things, and what's the time frame? Where are we? And actually, I would like to just touch upon one thing without trying to jump the gun too much. It turns out the post office had reached out. So as I said, my parents went through IVA. I've just found out that the post office had reached out to the IVA company, basically asking them whether who held the claim to the Post Office Historical Shortfall Scheme, effectively saying that my parents don't have a claim against the HSS. This recently happened. When I say recently, we've been in the application process, like you said, 2020. They reached out saying, we need to confirm if you're allowed to, effectively, if you're allowed to claim for the HSS or if it goes to the IVA company. The IVA company has responded, telling them they have no claim, deal with it with the SETIs. It's entirely theirs. But this, again, is kind of, this is 3 years on. And you're telling me after applying for 3 years and all the work I've done to get, you know, you're trying to basically not pay. It's like they're trying everything in the book to just not close the matter with my parents.
Do you have any sense, after all these interactions with the scheme, with the post office, with Bayes, whatever it is, what's driving this kind of lack of urgency or whatever it is?
I mean, I don't want to say it's incompetent, or that it could be a bit of incompetency, given that, for example, as I said last year, I sent an email and they referred back to an email from several months beforehand that doesn't answer the questions that I asked. I honestly, and I've said this, and I'll say this on record, I think it's deliberate. Okay, and there's a few reasons why I think it's deliberate. I think it's deliberate because, first of all, the longer this takes, whatever the initial offer will be, you're more likely to get people to accept it, because people have been fighting for 20 plus years already, and then this application process at the HSS has been 3 years this year now. Okay, I've said it before, my parents and countless others do not want to think about the post office. They do not want to be dropping an email to the post office, answering questions from the post office. I'm sick and tired of it, and I've been doing it for the last few years. My parents are. It's draining. It's so draining, and it's soul destroying, and you just want to move on with your life, and you just can't do that. I think it's intentional. I think, and I don't know the official numbers. I've tried to have a look yesterday before catching up with you guys today. As I recall, early media articles said that they set aside X amount for the historical shortfall scheme. If you have a look at the number that they've paid out that they were publicising late last year, there's a big delta.
It's a lot less,
which basically tells you that either so they've paid out a lot less than what they apparently held aside, which basically means, well, if they're going to long this out as long as possible, and if they're going to put out quite poor offers, but people have been fighting tooth and nail for this long, I think people are just going to take that offer and move on with their life. And I can understand that. I completely understand it. But to me, it's intentional. They are purposely dragging it out to really just so people will take the lowest, whatever the first payment is, fine, I'm done with you. Pay me the money, let me get on with my life. And I think that's intentional by the post office.
Which is backed up, I guess, by those figures that we heard on December 8th from the lawyers. When a lawyer gets involved with a claim, it suddenly increases a huge amount. People are being offered way less than this.
And that was one of the things exactly that came out of the inquiry. They felt that there was a lot of the initial offers that have been accepted as well, let's be clear, have been on the lower side of things. And that concerns me, obviously. But... yeah, it's got to be intentional. I knew this would be the case anyway. And I can understand that. I spoke to my parents. Do you want to keep fighting and things like that as well? Because, as I said, they're in their 70s now, right? And they've been dealing with this since they were 50, okay? Like, they don't want to keep moving. But at the same time, I know what they've gone through, and I'm not really willing to just let them be lowballed by the post office, because the post office has purposely done this intentionally, dragging it out for 3 years. Let's be clear here, as I said, if you had an issue with Tesco and it went on 3 years, it'd be a bigger issue, right? The fact that this is the government and the post office, and it's kind of okay, it's not okay.
Do you have legal representation?
No. So the post office historical shortfall scheme does not allow for, or didn't certainly for the first 3 years of the application, I don't know if it's recently changed, didn't allow for any legal representation as part of the application to the HSS. So you can do it, but you'd have to pay for it out of your own pocket. And obviously, if you're paying for it out of your own pocket, these are people, again, as my parents and other people, we don't have the reserves for legal fees to be set aside from us. I think the post office recently claimed they'll give a small amount, but that amount effectively would pay for what the post office pays to their legal team. I mean, you're talking, they're paying thousands and thousands. We could get maybe like an hour of someone's legal time effectively for the same offering. So I'm having to do all the work myself. We do have legal representation for the government inquiry, but that's part of the government inquiry. But that's not helping the historical shortfall scheme. That gives us no input into the HSS application effectively. So we're left to do it ourselves basically, like I said, and a lot of these other people, certainly who we met at the inquiry, who are in their 80s, who are still waiting, they don't have anyone else to fight for them. So I can see them taking maybe the first offers that they're getting so they can just move on with their life.
There's a serious structural flaw here, isn't there? Because the post office and the government who's supplying the compensation hold all the cards. They can just wait this out and, you know, maybe if a few claimants die, which we know they have, whilst waiting for compensation in the historical shortfall scheme, that's going to make things a bit cheaper. I think you're right that people will get so exhausted they'll cave and settle for a lower offer. And there is no stick that can be waved here at the post office. And it seems like there's no political will or appetite to really light a fire under them. And you, the only recourse I guess you have, which is why I asked about legal advice, is trying to sue them for the lost earnings or the breach of contract, which I suspect if you don't have a huge amount of paperwork would be quite a difficult case to raise. So they've got the whip hand.
Yeah, and the contracts were always heavily weighted in their favour anyway, for example, because you were employed as agents, not as employees, pensions, things like that. You never had that offering. But certainly, I mean, first of all, there's been every week there's a new government minister in charge of BASE as well, which doesn't help the situation. But I think it's a case of, as you said, is they hold all the cards. I know they could fix this quickly, right? We know that. We know that this, the end of the day, the post office, if the government wanted to fix this and the post office wanted to fix this, they could have fixed this in a year after the HSS. They could have fixed it by now. It's a lack of willingness, as you said, and a lack of urgency and a lack of and it's troubling because people like us and other people like us, it's just waiting. It's just a waiting game, and you, like you said, you can't escalate. I speak to my local MP, my mum and dad's local MP. They are they are emailing and trying to get a chase up the post office, but it doesn't. All they get responses back is the same thing. We're dealing with a case. We'll keep Mr. Setti informed. But that's it. There's no one that can really come in and say, right, enough's enough now. And that should really have been the case several years ago.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about, on December 8th, the post office mentioned a new deadline for its HSS claimants that it was planning to, I remember it saying it was planning to get all offers out by end of January. Have you had an offer yet, or have you heard from them in any way?
No, quite simple. No, I sent my last email probably about a week or two ago. Oh, about a week ago, I sent an email saying, what's the status? Where are we? You're delaying things again. I send that quite frequently. It's, as I said, the 27th of January, no offers come forward. Still waiting. We received a small interim payment, nothing that was kind of, anywhere near what the losses were. And actually my parents' house got flooded, and that's why I was chasing up, because their house became flooded and a pipe burst, and they have had to move out of their house now. So, you know, we're struggling enough as it is, and now they have to move out of their house. We received a very small interim payment last week, but no compensation whatsoever. And again, when? Yeah.
It must make you want to go and stand outside the post office headquarters in central London with a placard. I mean, because what else can you do?
I was going to say, have you emailed this, the new CEO?
I haven't. I'm sure they'll get an OBE or MBE or something in a very short term. The post office, like I said, it's solvable, right? We don't need to. They know what they're doing, because I tell them this all the time. I tell them that the hardships and the stress is put from my parents. They went through this for 20 years. The stress they're going through now, okay, over this, you know, mum, dad, I need to go back to them because they've asked this stupid question from 15 years ago. Can you recall? Mum, dad, I've got to try and find some paperwork. Let's go through your briefcase again to see if we missed something, you know. And again, we don't have much, but we might have. It could be solved. It could be solved a lot quicker. It's just soul destroying. And also, like I said, now it's taken on for me. I've got two young boys myself now, and things like I'm having to spend weekends or evenings having to draft, you know, emails to whether that's to the inquiry or whether it's to the HSS to try and move things along.
So just to give people an idea, after the 65 questions with its sub questions that appeared in February last year, you've been chasing things, but what kind of, do they come back to you piecemeal with odd questions now, or has there been another big questionnaire, or has there been silence?
Basically me asking what's the status and then coming back saying we're still working through your case, it's complicated, we'll let you know when we have something. So it's a very much a stock answer. There's no further, hasn't really been any further questions or things up until, like I said, most recently, when they were trying to, it sounded like they were trying to not give us the money and trying to claim that the IVA company, which is a big, massive financial firm, could have claimed our money instead. And thankfully, they said, no, that's rubbish. But no, they don't come to us with anything. They just literally, you know, it's just, we're working through your case. It's complicated. If you've got a team of God knows how many people, which they should have at least a team of 5 to 10 people working on this effectively for 3 years. I mean, again, I work in a company. You couldn't get away with this in any other industries, right? With a 3 year complaint effectively sitting on your books.
Yeah, I mean, the very best they can be is under-resourced. If they're not malicious and if they're not incompetent, maybe they're under-resourced. But again, that goes back to
the... And they're sort of under-resourced from a militia. Like, why are they under-resourced?
Well, I mean, we know that the post office were completely taken aback by the number of claims that they had in the short window that this scheme
very
was
short window. By the way, that's a very short window they had it open for. To, again, to reduce...
Very short window during the pandemic, yeah. When people were trying to keep families alive, not go hunting in attics for paperwork. Yeah. But the fact that the post office, even after the litigation, still had no idea what it had been doing to the number of people that it had hurt and financially hurt, I find incredible. And you would have thought that once they'd had that scale of reaction, once they'd had those thousands of applications to the HSS, they would have crewed up accordingly and got the manpower in through the door to deal with these applications. But it just, but as you say, it just seems
just to add on that as well, sorry, is we know now, apparently according to the post office figures, that 95% of the cases have been dealt with, right? So all that man
I think it's 95% of people have had offers,
and I think 70% or so perhaps have completed the process. So you still have the same resources, I imagine. So you've now got a very smaller pocket to deal with. So you think that if it should be kind of getting quicker towards the end almost, if anything, because you've kind of got the same resources, but less people, because you've had more people who have accepted it and you've closed their cases effectively. But it doesn't feel like that's actually the reality, right? It feels like it's going the other way and it's taking just as long. But I'm sitting here going, based on your figures, this is the post office figures, I think there was 2,100 or so applications to the HSS and they've solved like 1,900, or at least had an offer, whether formally accepted or you know, they've kind of waiting. That basically means you've got like 100 or 50 odd people left that you're trying to deal with. One of them is ours. Based on their figures, again, this is whether how accurate they are. We know how they are with computer systems and numbers. If they've got 150 people pending, that they should be, I shouldn't have to be chasing now for the last 3 months going, where are we? You should be able to say to me, next week we'll have an answer for you. And then I can shut up. I'll go, fine, great. I don't, you know, it's again, it's that finger in the air of what's happening, when's it happening? I have no idea. You're not telling me.
And they are spending a lot of money, millions, on the administration of the scheme. Like their annual report, I think, has a figure of, I think it's 30 something million that they're spending on admin and legal fees. So the money is being spent somewhere, but apparently not on processing the claims.
No, and like I said, I don't. If they came to me and said, "Well, you'll have an offer in your inbox by X date," like at least I can give a bit of comfort to my parents and to ourselves that we know that. So it's an opaque process that they purposely have hidden behind closed doors, and they give you very little insight. Even when I ask, "What stage are we at?" I think that's a fair question to ask as one of the applicants to the scheme. Where are we, and what is the average time taken at this scheme? When did we move into this stage, and what's the next stage? Those are common questions that any business should be able to answer in such a process that, you know, it takes X amount of time at this level. It doesn't have to be, it can be an average time. Obviously, somebody might be shorter or quicker, but you should be able to provide that information. I asked for that in July, I think it was, or August of last year. Still haven't heard.
Is there enough heat, do you think, on Nick Reed? He's the chief executive of the post office. The post office are in charge of the historical shortfall scheme. He doesn't really seem to be scrutinised for the way that this scheme is operated properly.
I think that Nick, I mean, again, this comes back to if it could be solved very quickly. I don't feel, let's take this back example, right? We know that they had set aside X amount of money and they have hit nowhere near that amount of money for the payments, right? So they could have easily solved the matter now, because you don't need to have back and forth and all this analysis on the payment, right? So in terms of, they could be setting this now. they're not. And to your point about Nick, like, you know, I think he got a very healthy bonus, as I saw in the news articles.
Yeah, I think he got a £400,000 bonus, and he made much of the fact that he was the guy who came in and settled the group litigation back in 2019. But what has he achieved since?
Yeah, and to your point there, is what is he now getting from the HSS? I mean, he's not coming in. I mean, for example, he could be brought into the inquiry to say, right, where are we with compensation, which I believe the next compensation discussion is in April now, several months away. I think the idea is that everyone would have had a payout by April, although who knows. But it shouldn't be taking this long, right? So bring him in. But, you know, ask him the question, why is it taking this long? You can clearly solve the problem. But, again, this comes to the point, we're fighting, we're doing what we can, but there's no real incentive for them to fix the problem. There's no real incentive. It doesn't seem like the government are pushing very highly on the matter, as in they'll come in and give a talk once a month to say there's an update in Parliament. Great. But the reality is very different to what's being said, right? The reality is this will happen. You know, we're going to make sure everyone gets payment. Great. Okay. But you could have mandated that everyone should have had the payment by December 22nd, you know, end of December. That could have happened. They could have mandated that and they could have made it happen. Instead, there is no, and sorry, that's another point just to touch upon quickly. If you, let's say you challenge your payment, and I don't know how many people are going through that process at the moment in terms of that, you'll recall the post office set a target of 95% of offers going out the door. If you challenge that offer, there's no time frame. There's no, it's not, we will fix your, okay, fine, you want to go into resolution, we'll have it done and fixed in 1 month, 3 months, whatever that is. We could be back here in a year's time or 2 years' time if we're challenging, and we don't know, because there's no, they have to set structures around not just the HSS and the wider thing to say, if you're going to go into resolution, fine, but you need to have it fixed by this date. You cannot go further. You cannot keep dragging this on. Those are things that I'm asking for. Seems like common sense as well, but if the government doesn't mandate it to the post office, it's just not going to happen. Even David Reid, to your point, could mandate it. He could say anyone who goes into resolution has to be done within 3 months, done. You know, we have to find a way, but he hasn't said that because he's going home with a £400,000 bonus.
How old are your mum and dad now?
My dad is now, I think he's 71 now. I'm trying to think now. He's 71 this year. He'll be turning, and my mum will be turning 69 this year.
And are they looking at anything like a comfortable retirement if they don't get the compensation?
Oh no, I mean. Not really, no. They don't work anymore following the pandemic. My dad stopped, he wanted to go to work, but we just said, look, during the pandemic, they were asking him to come back to work, and we told him he couldn't. Not really, no. There's no comfort. They don't have, again, to come back, they don't have pensions and things, right? Because through the workplace, because the post office never paid into people's pensions because you was never an employee of the post office. So you've got your state pension, which, let's be clear here, is not a bundle of money. So they don't really have a comfortable life ahead of them. You know, it's, and this is the point, is my parents, other people in the process, they're still living with, you know, I'm not saying anything for struggles, but they can't just live freely. They've suffered for so long that the suffering doesn't end until the post office just says, here's some money. Okay, even that won't fix the problem, right? It's not going to take back not seeing your parents working day shifts, night shifts and things like that. It's not going to take my dad working 7 days a week at night, which messes with your body clock alone as it is and things, right? That's not going to happen for several years. But at least it gives you a bit of closure, right? You can, and at least it means mum, dad, you can go on holiday, you can go visit the family, you can go take that trip you've always wanted to take sort of thing, right? They can do those sort of things, hopefully. But I genuinely, and I've said this again in the inquiry, but I genuinely feel that them taking as long as possible to settle the matter, I think, is intentional. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's intentional to the point where, you know, if someone dies during the process, they, you know, if they haven't got, and I don't even know if there's a formal governance around, can you still claim, can you, you know, what the process is. Knowing the post office, they'll probably turn around and say, well, that's it then, that's the end of the matter. I, you know, we want the closure now, that's all we want. We just want the closure. I don't want to think about the post office unless I'm posting a letter. I don't want my parents to think about the post office. I just want them to live their life as comfortable as possible for the rest of the years, you know, enjoy the time with their grandkids. But yeah, I fear that in a year's time, Nick, I'll be back on here talking to you about where we are at the next stage.
Well, obviously, I sincerely hope that if we are talking again, it's about, you know, much happier news. And I'm deeply grateful to you for coming on and talking to us. And please do give our regards to your mum and dad and wish them all the very best in their fight for compensation.
Yeah, thank you, Adi.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me on. And I'll certainly keep you guys posted if I ever hear back from the post office.
That was Adeep Sethi talking about the trials of his father, Baljit, a claimant to the post office's historical shortfall scheme. We've been in touch with the post office, who say they can't discuss individual cases, but they did tell us that in answer to Adeep's question, that yes, if Baljit, God forbid, dies before he gets final compensation, his family will be allowed to continue the claim.
On the issue of delays, the post office say some of the claims are very complex. The age of some of the cases, of course, can regrettably mean that the work takes longer. The post office wants the resolution to the remaining historical shortfall scheme claims to be quicker, and we are making good progress to our aim of getting offers to everyone by the end of March at the latest.
The post office also says claims are assessed by the HSS's independent advisory panel, who recommend a fair outcome. The panel was expanded to 16 people during last year, and the scheme is continuing to work hard to send offers to the remaining eligible applications as soon as possible, and with the best endeavours, the scheme provides for interim payments.
And the Sethis have had an interim payment. The post office goes on to say, "We are sincerely sorry for the impact of the Horizon scandal on the lives of victims and their families. Offers of compensation totalling more than £74 million have been made through the historical shortfall scheme, with 95% of applicants receiving outcomes of their claims."
Thanks very much to Adeep and the Sethi family for sharing their story with us. Incidentally, the 2002 Brentwood Gazette article about the Sethis and the post office's faulty computer system has been entered into evidence in the post office Horizon IT inquiry. And I'll put a link to it in the blurb to this podcast. OK, Rebecca, so as we mentioned before our interview with Adeep, the inquiry is currently on hiatus, but it will soon be back with some really interesting witnesses coming up.
Yes, it will be back on February 21st with a week of techies, including the recall of Alan Delvarez, a former Fujitsu program director. So it'll be interesting to see why he's coming back. And then various IT architects. Then looking a bit further ahead, it will be quite exciting to hear from Richard Roll, the only whistleblower in this entire scandal, if I'm remembering correctly, on March the 9th.
He's certainly the most prominent one. He appeared in our first Panorama in 2015, yeah. And was also... gave evidence in the High Court and was considered by the judge to be one of the, if not the most significant witness in blowing the whole story wide open. So, yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what he has to say.
Definitely. And then we'll have another break and return on May 2nd with some very big names in this scandal, former Fujitsu engineers and Chambers, followed by Gareth Jenkins. Both have been mentioned several times during the inquiry so far and have been used in the past by the post office as expert witnesses in sub-postmaster prosecutions. Both have also been questioned by the Met Police about their role in those prosecutions and are currently under investigation. So there is a big few weeks coming up, hopefully lots of insight into what happened, why it happened, how it happened.
Absolutely. And I know Gareth Jenkins asked Sir Wynne Williams if he would consider asking the Attorney General to make him exempt from prosecution should he give any incriminating evidence in the inquiry. And Sir Wynne Williams decided that he wasn't going to ask the Attorney General for that. And he's on the stand for 2 days as well, isn't he?
Mm.
Okay, thanks, Rebecca. That's it for this week. Thanks to you very much indeed for listening.
Our work in this inquiry is mainly financed by your crowdfunding donations. If you can spare us the price of a coffee or a pint, please go to the donate page on the Post Office Scandal website. You will be signed up to Nick's secret email, which collates everything going on at the inquiry and in the wider scandal.
Investigating the Post Office Scandal is produced and presented by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace, with sage advice and support from Whistledown Productions.
We'll be back soon.
See you soon. Take care.
Bye.